Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, is brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK.
Coming up on this week's show, relationship expert Tracy McMillan is here to chat about hosting another season of OWN's hit series, Family or Fiancé. Actor and singer Jacob Latimer is also here to discuss his role in the new comedy, Like a Boss, which opens in theaters this weekend. And closing out the show is my exclusive interview with music legend Dionne Warwick. She'll take us down memory lane and dish about her most iconic songs and musical moments. I'll also be playing music from Miss Warwick, along with Jacob Latimer and Victor Wooten. But first, here's Reva Blue with this week's casting buzz and entertainment news.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
CL Casting is looking for men and women between the ages of 18 to 60 with vehicles from 1990 to 2009 with muted tones like burgundy or black for an upcoming project. You must be available to work a few days beginning February 10th through April 30th. If this is you, please submit your name, age, weight, phone number, and three photos to submissions at catretcasting.com with available car in the subject line of the email. In other related entertainment news, don't forget to watch the Critics' Choice Awards tomorrow night at 7 p.m. on the CW Network. This year's show is hosted by TV and Broadway star Taye Diggs. And finally, in theaters this weekend is Just Mercy, starring Jamie Foxx, Michael B. Jordan, Brie Larson, and Karen Kendrick. It follows young lawyer Brian Stevenson and Walter McMillan, who in 1987 was sentenced to die for the notorious murder of an 18-year-old girl, despite evidence proving his innocence. That's this week's Casting Buzz and Entertainment News. I'm Reva Blue.
Support for WCLK programming comes from the High Museum of Art, presenting Friday Jazz on January the 17th from 6 p.m. until 10 p.m. This month features vocalist Tony Hightower. Guests can enjoy a night of live music in the High's atrium, plus explore Romare Bearden's profile series on view through February the 2nd. Friday Jazz is hosted by yours truly, Jamal Ahmed. Tickets available at high.org.
Far away for you to say come back some other day. And no, you don't believe that they do come true. For did my dreams come true when I look to you? And maybe too, if you would believe, you too might be.
Hi, this is Iyanla Van Zandt, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
My first segment features Tracy McMillan from the popular OWN series, Family or Fiancé. The best-selling author, journalist, and screenwriter opens up about how her past failed marriages served as a springboard for her current career as a relationship expert and host of the show. She goes on to further explain how your biggest wounds are where you have the most to give. Listen to a portion of our conversation. Tracy McMillan, welcome to the show.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you? Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
I know.
So you're back for another season of Family or Fiancé, OWN's hit relationship series.
Yes.
And man, I've got a chance to watch a sneak peek of it, and whoa, the drama.
We bring it. I mean, the thing is everybody knows that families bring drama.
Yeah.
And you've got these couples who want to get married, their families are against it, and you just put everybody under one roof and watch it go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's like in 3, 2, 1, go.
But there's so much healing that happens in every episode.
Yeah.
And I think the takeaway, the big picture, is that when you are honest and you unpack real issues in your relationship and in your family, you get to have a healing. You get free.
Yeah. Before we get into the new season,
yes,
let's go back.
Okay.
How did you become a relationship expert?
Oh, my goodness.
Because you've got so many other talents. You're an author.
Oh,
you're a screenwriter.
Man. Well, you know, everything I do kind of comes back to relationships. And I feel like I became a relationship expert by failing at relationships.
Okay.
And then learning from my mistakes. Because, you know, so I... Not to start at the very beginning,
yeah,
except I'm born in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Okay. But I had a crazy childhood. And oftentimes, you know, my mother gave me up at like 3 months. My dad was a pimp and a drug dealer. He went to prison for most of my life. I was in lots of foster care. And when you come out of a childhood like that, you have a lot of unresolved trauma. And you choose relationships based on that trauma. Well, it took me about 25, 30 years of therapy to be able to say that sentence, mm-hmm. right? All I knew is that I was kind of careening from one relationship to the next and making a lot of mistakes along the way and doing a lot of things right. But without doing that work to unpack all of it, I was just going to keep doing the same thing over and over. So this journey that I went on to sort of fix myself and to put myself back together, ultimately, I started helping other people. Now, it was very sort of informal at first. I worked in TV news for many years. And so newsrooms are filled with people. And I would invariably be talking to people about their relationships and sharing what I was learning and things I'd gotten from therapy, things I'd learned from my experience. And people started being helped. Like, wow. It became a thing.
Yeah.
People would be like, can I have my friend call you?
Yeah.
You know, or my friend needs to talk to you. Soon I had like a network of people that I was informally coaching.
Yeah.
And, you know, this unfolded over a period of like a decade or more. And then I started writing television and I wrote an essay and I wrote books, right? I wrote my first book and I wrote an essay called Why You're Not Married. And it really was like, because people would say to me, you've been married and divorced 3 times? Like, I can't even get married once. And so I wrote this comedic sort of tongue-in-cheek but very real look at what I saw my friends or women I knew, what they were doing that were the reasons that they weren't married. Because I think we would rather think that the problem is out there. That, you know, men just aren't good enough or it's hard to find a good man or, you know, whatever, I'm too old, whatever reasons people think, you know, I'm too fabulous is a big one. Like, you're not married because you're too fabulous, you know. No, that's not why,
yeah.
You know. So
yeah.
As when you start to get real with yourself, and anything about having a good life is going to require you to really get real, you know, and I felt like my piece was really about that. Like, here's why. And then it went insanely viral because I guess a lot of people agreed with me. And then a whole bunch of people also didn't agree with me. And it became the number one most read on the Huffington Post for more than 2 years.
Wow.
And it resonated with a lot of people. And then that just started, that just blew everything up. Suddenly people want me to talk on the radio or they want me to be on TV. I wrote a book. I went on Oprah's Super Soul Sunday, and then eventually I started doing this show. Oprah gave me a show.
Yeah.
So here we are, and it's basically the same thing that I've been doing all along, which is I use the experiences I've had and all the learning I've done, and I help you apply it to your relationship and your family system.
Yeah. You're listening to the voice of Tracy McMillan, a host of Family or Fiancé, which airs on Saturday evenings on OWN. Let's get into this new season.
Yeah.
Like we were talking offline, got a chance to see a sneak peek of the first episode, really the entire episode. And you really got to see the healing that you were talking about,
mm-hmm.
the transformation
mm-hmm.
of this couple going from, look, we're going to get married, we're doing this, but we're going to get married in 6 days. And their family's
yes.
like, no.
Yeah.
You're not, because there's some unresolved issues. How do you, because in my head, I see you as Glinda the Good Witch,
oh,
right?
Oh, that's funny.
And so the
I'm the relationship Good Witch.
Yeah, you're the relationship Good Witch. And the couples are kind of mm-hmm. in this, you know, wacky land of Oz with
mm-hmm.
the lions and tigers and bears, which is their family.
Mm-hmm.
How do you maintain the peace? Because when you come in, it's almost like how Glinda came.
That's really,
you know,
funny.
To basically help mm-hmm. Dorothy understand who these munchkins were. But you kind of come and it's calm. You kind of, you know,
yeah.
Set the tone of the atmosphere for that. You know, you change the atmosphere, I should
it's
say.
That's true.
How do you do that?
Well, I think the main thing is to be holding space for whatever is in the highest good. It's really a spiritual journey.
Yeah.
And when I say spiritual, however you understand God, however you understand spirituality, but it's basically like that intangible thing that is at the core of every human being and certainly at the core of every relationship and every family. So I'm there to hold a space for whatever is the highest of that. to come forward. Because, you know, it's sort of like there's infinite possibilities in any situation. And it can turn left or it can turn right. A lot of it is like, is, you know, where are people putting their attention? Now, it doesn't mean, see, you have to look at problems in a couple, because it goes like this. There's an individual, they're part of a couple, they're part of a family. So oftentimes the issues in the couple are going to be reflected by the family.
Hmm.
Oftentimes also the issues in the couple originate in the family. So there's an opportunity to have this amazing healing by bringing the couple and the family together. And it all starts with you look at that individual. Because often you'll see that, here's the thing. People go into healing. I want to say therapy, but we don't really do therapy. What we do is we unpack. But what draws people into this experience is that they want their partner to get it. Okay. Nobody goes in there thinking, you know what? I'm going to go on Family or Fiancé so I can get it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
They go on Family or Fiancé so their partner will get it, or their mother-in-law to be will get it. Somebody else is always going to be the one to get it. But what happens on the show is that everyone gets something.
Yeah.
Everyone gets it.
Yeah.
Because every person there has things that they're working on, and a family is like a perfect laboratory for working on your own stuff. You know?
And you really get to see that. I mean, I don't want to give away that first episode, but mm-hmm. you really get to see that with the sisters, and then mm-hmm. there's a piece with the father. And again,
yeah.
I don't want to give it away, but you really get to see what you just said, the healing working through, the realization that mm-hmm. everyone's eyes are sort of
yes.
open to what's really going on.
Yes.
And being able to have that safe space. And I think, you know, mm-hmm. when you look at the houses that you guys
yeah.
put these families, I mean, it's like, oh my gosh,
it's amazing.
But I think you need that type of space
mm-hmm.
in order for these transformations to take place.
It's true. I mean, it helps.
Yeah.
It certainly helps
yeah.
to have beautiful surroundings. And the house, this, and I'm glad you bring up the house.
Yeah.
It's deep Malibu. I mean, deep. It's like an hour and 27 minute commute one way from regular LA where I live.
Right.
And when you're out there, it's like it's just you and the nature and like the hawks and the, you know, it is a very powerful place. And people are removed from their everyday. There's not, they don't have their cell phones. They don't have their, you know, we stay busy
yeah.
and it keeps you out of your feelings. So there's no distractions. There's just themselves.
Thank you, Tracy. Check out the full unedited version of our interview at WCLK.com, where she talks more about the show, plus her work on a reboot of the classic 80s film Flashdance and much more. Family or Fiancé Season 2 debuts tonight at 9 p.m. on OWN.
Support for WCLK programming comes from Spivey Hall, presenting jazz pianist Kenny Barron and his quintet on Saturday, January the 25th at 7:30 p.m. The evening will feature music from Kenny's quintet's 2018 release, Concentric Circles, and other selections from his repertoire. Spivey Hall is located on the campus of Clayton State University in Morrow, just 10 minutes south of the perimeter on I-75. More information is available at spiveyhall.org.
No, I like watching you when you look undecided. All of these strip around you, you feel like you drowning. Don't wanna live, you don't wanna live no more. Don't wanna live, you don't wanna live.
I'm Niecy Nash,
I'm Karrueche Tran,
and you are listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
You just heard new music from R&B sensation Jacob Latimer. The 20-something-year-old Atlanta-based performer is appearing in the upcoming comedy Like a Boss. The film stars Tiffany Haddish and Rose Byrne as two best friends whose relationship is put to the test after selling their makeup line to a cosmetic titan played by Selma Hayek. I caught up with Jacob during this week's press tour to discuss his exciting role, the new season of his Showtime series The Chi, and much more.
So I believe this is your first comedic role? Like a Boss? Yeah.
Yeah, I would say
I guest starred in Ride Along with Kevin Hart.
That's right.
Was pretty cool. I mean, The Shy is pretty comedic, I think. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's so a little bit more serious, but this is really funny.
Yeah, this is like goofball funny. You know what I mean? So
let's talk about this role, because you're locking lips with Tiffany Haddish.
Yeah. It's crazy, man. It's fun. It's fun. You know, I think I had to really match her level of intensity and energy. You know what I mean? Like, she just all day, just yelling, screaming, saying whatever she feel like saying, you know? And that's draining, though. You know, comedic timing is hard, and keeping up that pace, that energy all day for she had to film, 2 months? I filmed 4 days, you know what I mean?
Great. So did you audition for the role, or was this something that was given to you?
Yeah, I was actually filming The Shy, and then I got the audition in my email. I had hooked up with a self-tape lady in Chicago, and I sent the tape, and then it looked like it was leaning my way. So I was trying to let Showtime know, and like some of the showrunners, like, please let me do this.
Yeah.
Like, please. Like, this is a dope look. You know what I mean? At the top of the year, it'll be fly. And they were like, oh yeah, we're trying to work something out for you. So they moved the Shy schedule around for me, because it was looking like I wasn't going to be able to do it.
Okay.
Because of the schedule. You know what I mean? So it ended up working out, though.
Yeah.
We did it. Yes.
And if you can, without giving the film away or giving your too much of your role away, what was, I guess, one of your favorite scenes of working with her?
Probably the kitchen scene. Which is like, I'm flipping pancakes and I'm smacking.
Showing off the new body.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's, I'm running the pull-ups, back, you know. But that was probably the funnest scene for me.
So let's get into The Shy. I think we're moving into season two?
Yeah, we just finished season three. Okay. So we got Lala, we got Luke James on now, we got Lil Rel, including the original game.
And what do you enjoy the most about playing Emmett? Because we kind of know this character now, and you've been playing him for quite some time. So what do you enjoy the most about playing him?
I think just always finding ways to just be relatable and be connecting in that way. I think it's just it's a role I get to keep diving into. You know what I mean? Like when you do a film, you know, you really only have that like month or two to dive into that character, and then it's over. You know what I mean? You're on to the next one. But every year I get to just see like how I can amp it up even more. So season three, I you'll see a lot more range of emotion from me this season, which is it's gonna be dope. I was nervous, you know, obviously all the stuff that's going around our show. So I was just like, oh, man, are we even going to be back? Is it going to be the same? You know, is it going to be good? But, you know, I had to realize we all are really talented. We got really dope actors and we got really dope writers. So after we shot the first episode, I felt much better and more confident about season three. So I can't wait for people to see it.
Like a Boss is in theaters this weekend.
Support for WCLK programming comes from the High Museum of Art, Something Over Something Else, Romare Bearden's profile series in its final weeks at the High. The exhibition is inspired by Bearden's earliest memories as a boy in North Carolina in the 1910s and concludes with his life as a young artist in Harlem in the early 1940s, closing February the 2nd, 2020. Ticket information is available at high.org.
This is Coleman Domingo, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
You just heard the voice of Grammy Award-winning music legend Dionne Warwick performing her version of the classic 80s tune, That's What Friends Are For. The song was released 35 years ago this year as a charity single for AIDS research and prevention and became an anthem for the movement. I caught up with Ms. Warwick during the holidays when she was promoting her album, Dionne Warwick and the Voices of Christmas, to discuss the backstory of that song as well as many of her other hits. Listen to a portion of my exclusive productive conversation.
2020 is going to be another big year for you. We mentioned prior to getting started with this that it's actually the 35th anniversary of your iconic song, That's What Friends Are For. Can we talk about that and what really inspired that particular record? Because that was really a bold move for you as an artist at that time. AIDS was just not something that people wanted to attach themselves to, and you went boldly forward to...
You know, I heard the song. I was doing a project for Arista, and Clive had asked Bert to be a part of the project itself. So I just left their home, he and Carol Bersager, listening to songs. And that evening, I was watching TV, and a film called Night Shift came on. And at the end of the film, while they were rolling credits, a song called That's What Friends Are For came on. And I waited to see who wrote the song, and as it turned out, it was Bert and Hal and Carol. So the next day, when I went back to the house, I said, well, why didn't you guys play the song for me? So Carol, who I continued to call a hoot, said, well, now four people know that song. I said, what are you talking about? He said, well, Bert, myself, you, and Rod Stewart, who recorded the song. I said, well, everybody should know this song. So I said, I want to record it. And they said, fine. And I called my friends. I called Gladys first, and she said, yeah. Stevie, of course, said, of course. I ran into Elton in the grocery store. Wow. That's where I found him, and he said yes. And that song was not originally designated as the anthem it's become for the AIDS issue. It was just a song with friends. And it happened that Elizabeth Taylor was in the studio, who was friends with Bert and Carol, and she asked if we would mind giving that song to her foundation, AMFAR, to combat the AIDS issue. And since we felt, well, we had lost so many people within our industry, each individually and collectively, and if our talents were going to raise awareness and funds, why not? So that's how it became the song it is regarding AIDS. Wow.
That year was also another big year for We Are the World, which was another iconic moment in music history.
Yeah.
Can we talk about that night?
Oh, that was a night. That was one of those you had to be there.
Yeah.
You know, people keep asking me, how was it? You can't explain a night like that. It was just one of those, truly, you had to be there to know what kind of night it was. We all knew why we were there. We wanted to be able to help some folk feed themselves in Africa. There were representatives of those countries in the studio with us to say thank you. But we felt the pleasure was ours, giving our talent to be able to send food over there, and not only that, but also teach them how to provide themselves with food. So it was just,
like you said,
we are the world.
Yeah,
that's what it was.
Yeah, yeah. Another project that was a personal favorite of mine was the Woman in Red soundtrack
that
you did with Stevie Wonder, and love those, all of those songs.
Absolutely.
Can you talk about that collaboration?
That was a joy to do. I was asked by Gene Wilder, who produced the film, to be the music coordinator. So I said, yes, I'd love to. And he says, okay, then you find out who it is that you want to write the score for the film. Blah, blah, blah. And I told him, I said, I went to Lionel Richie first. And Lionel was just a little too busy. I said, okay, fine. And I called my Stevie. I said, Stevie, I want you to do a film with me. He said, okay. He said, I want you to write the score for it. He said, okay. I said, all right. I called Gene Wilder. I said, Stevie Wonder's going to write the music for the film. He looked at me and he said, but he's got to see the film. I said, he will. He'll see it. Stevie's blind. I said, yeah, I know he's blind. How's he going to see the film? I said, calm down. Trust me. And Stevie was here in New Jersey, flew into L.A. to view the film. And he sat to my left, and I watched a film for him.
Okay.
And whenever there was a scene where people were laughing, he said, "What's going on?" And I would explain visually what I was seeing to him. And he says, "Well, what does she look like?" I said, "She's absolutely gorgeous. She's got on this red dress, it's flying in the air," and that's where the woman in red title came from. We went in the studio, we recorded the entire CD, the entire score. Stevie had to go to London, took the music with him. It scared me to death because he's over in London with the score and I've got to turn this music in. Oh, you have no idea. But see, I'm, you know, Barry Gordy even offered me a job. He said, "I'm the only one that gets Stevie to complete something in the time frame that's supposed to be completed." Well, that's true, because I threatened him. I threatened his life. But it was amazing. Nobody was more thrilled than me to see him jump up out of his seat at the Academy Awards and run blindly by himself to those stairs. So he had to go up until, I think it was Warner came in and grabbed his arm to take him up. He deserved that Oscar. He really did.
Watch the full interview with Miss Warwick on a special edition of the show airing this week on CAU TV, Comcast 23. Go to WCLK.com for more details. Well, that'll do it for this week's show. I'd like to thank all of my special guests, Tracy McMillan, Jacob Latimer, and Dionne Warwick. I'd also like to thank my engineer, Jami Wellman, Reva Blue, and you. Please tune in next week for another exciting edition of Upfront Inside Atlanta's Entertainment Industry. Happy Saturday, Atlanta, and Happy New Year.
If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront, Inside Atlanta's Entertainment Industry has been brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK, an NPR member-supported station.